Want to feel more confident with your finances this year? If you have 60 seconds, I can show you how quick and easy it is to start building healthy money habits that could last you the entire year just by using Rocket Money. Step one, download Rocket Money. Step two, link all your accounts and see your entire spending picture, your subscriptions, your upcoming bills, your due dates, everything. Step three, tap a subscription you don't use and cancel it. Boom! That's money back every single month. Step four, create a financial goal for something you want to save for, whether it be a vacation, a retirement account, or a pet's birthday. We don't judge. Now let the app automatically move small amounts of cash towards your goal. In a month, you'll see real dollars piling up. In a year, you'll be shocked at how much money you saved. Similar to the over 10 million members on the app that have saved up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Use the savings challenge as one step closer to feeling better about your finances today at rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. One more time, it's rocketmoney.com/cancel.
This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted, the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat. Welcome to episode 303 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander. And now, on to our read-along. This week, we will be continuing our The Fiery Cross read-along. We are starting part four, entitled I Hear No Music But the Sound of Drums, beginning with chapter 33, entitled Home for Christmas.
So Bree asks Roger what he would have done regarding Isaiah Morton and Alicia Brown. He says he doesn't know. Maybe he would have done what Jamie had done. These two, meaning Roger and Brianna, have finally had an hour's peace together, and now they are in a little afterglow. Roger, that's kind of the background of when this conversation is taking place. Jamie, Roger says, was stuck. He couldn't make a stink about Isaiah Morton leaving unless he'd wanted him dead, because the Browns would have killed the dude.
Well, they already wanted to kill him. So it was just like, unless I wanted to basically give them permission, nothing be done.
So all the snow that had covered Isaiah Morton's and Alicia Brown's footprints and hoof prints of their horse had melted by the morning. And it was like nothing but mud. So you couldn't see this for that. Weather had come. And now back into the present, Roger asks what the geese are for, because she mentions that there's geese being cooked. And she's like, Christmas. And he's like, oh, what? Like, when is Christmas? And she's like, tomorrow. They'd even decorated with wreaths and garlands and he'd missed it.
Can you imagine living in a time when you aren't so inundated with everything on God's green earth telling you that Christmas is in 5 days, Christmas is in 24 days?
It would be amazing.
I popped onto Facebook the other day and somebody had posted something that said, you know, so many days until fall weather, so many days until this, and so many days until holiday lights. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. Let's get to school first. Let's get to the
autumn. I
know.
I was like, good Lord. I'm like, I don't want to rush to Christmas, man. I'm still trying to get over how hot it is.
Oh, stop. I know. Erica B. writes, the chapter title Home for Christmas clues us in to where we are in the calendar, thankfully, because like Roger, I lost track of time. I knew it was winter time with the snowstorm of the last chapter, but otherwise I had no real idea. When I think of being home for Christmas, I automatically think everyone is happy and times are great. We shall see, I suppose, as we are all too familiar with the twists and turns that can happen in any given scene. We enter the chapter in the borrowed bedroom for Brianna and Roger. Remember, they're in Mr. Weems' bedroom because they're in the big house. I don't know who's in Jamie and Claire's room, but she's in the big house and she gave up their cabin to the Chisholm kiddos because they needed to be separated from, they needed to have their area to stop Mrs. Bug from going nutso and herself too. And we enter the chapter in the borrowed bedroom for Bree and Roger post-coitus. Missed opportunity for a steamy scene. I could have quoted for Ginger to read. Oh, well. They are discussing Jamie's response to Allie and Morton running off. I think I probably would have done the same thing. I do wish, however, we had more information about Morton's relationship with his wife so we could have appropriate levels of disdain or cheering for what was happening there. But I digress. Roger can't help but admire some of Bree's features that he loves so much and missed while he was away. In return, Bree plays with his goose flesh reactions to her touch. All quite nice and sweet. One of the best parts of relations of being apart, I think.
So to speak to her, the beginning of her statement about not knowing what time of year it is based on, you know, context clues. Snow alone is not indicative of the time of year where they are or, you know, where anyone who gets snow is. Because if you've ever lived a place where it snows, you have some years when it snows as early as October or November. And you have some years when it doesn't snow until March.
Well, or you have years where, I mean, I don't know how much active snow they got, but we had a year a few years ago where there was still snow up in Tahoe in June.
Yeah.
So he says the trip home had been long and tiring. And he relays a little bit about that to her. And he says, or they talk about how the geese are for dinner and half a hog, too, that Mrs. Bug had done. Just as she's about to ask him something, Roger shakes his breeks onto the floor, dried mud from them scattering onto the newly clean floor. She flips out, understandably, or maybe not understandably, but we find out why. But it is understandably once we find out why. He thinks she's upset about Christmas and she's had it. She tells him just what the last month had been like. Babies and laundry and screeching women and horrible children.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. He had dirtied her clean floors. And he didn't even ask about Jem, who's learned to crawl. All he'd thought about since arriving was himself and what he wanted. The problem is he doesn't understand. That's what she says. The problem is not what he said or what he didn't say. The problem is that he doesn't understand what the problem is.
Though, to be fair, and I had a real hard Not a hard time, but I had a struggle picking a side in this because she doesn't understand that he doesn't understand that she had these expectations.
Yeah.
But he also had expectations. You know, he's been gone. He's been doing all these things. And all he wanted to do when he got home was to share with her that. And so it's like they both wanted to do the things with and then overlooked each other's things.
Roger holds Bree from behind, and Bree tells him some of the happenings on the ridge that he'd missed. It all ended with geese, which they'll be eating, which she'd shot. She was mad because of the noise and the kids and the handling of it all that she had to do by herself, and she wanted to shoot something. Roger notes that he'd heard the geese calls, and with, quote, a strange feeling of loneliness at the heart, unquote. He wished Bree had been with him. So he had heard geese calls while they were separated. She'd taken care of them at the ridge, the geese, and she'd provided them, Bree, in her role as herself, she had taken care of everything. She was the go-to person at the ridge. She left them with a full larder. Taking a wider look around, he noticed that she'd lit the more valuable candles for his homecoming. And he notices the fresh bed linen. And he notices the floors. And he recognizes himself. Quote, hey, I may be a fool, but I love you, I? Unquote. And he gives her a sprig of juniper and tells her Merry Christmas. It's that time! Another season, another FabFitFun box has arrived. This time it's our fall box.
So if you haven't signed up for FabFitFun, what are you waiting for? Our listeners can get a great discount on their first box.
I like that FabFitFun includes full-size premium beauty, lifestyle, and wellness products.
treat yourself or another person to the Fall Box, a carefully curated collection of products like the Twine Cheese Board with Plate, which is a removable ceramic plate, stainless steel cutlery, and a chic acacia wood serving platter. And can anyone else be excited about cheese? Because yay, cheese!
And I love the cut from the cloth, slim striped wallet. It has 7 credit card slots, an ID window, and a full length bill compartment. It is a wallet that is just as functional as it is chic.
Did we mention that the FabFitFun membership goes beyond the box itself? Members can get access to members-only flash sales called add-ons, receive access to on-demand videos through FabFitFun TV, and access content from experts like Jillian Michaels, Venus Williams, and more.
These boxes, they sell out fast, so sign up for yours today.
FabFitFun is a seasonal subscription box with full-size beauty, fitness, fashion, and lifestyle products. It retails for $49.99, but always has a value of over $200.
Use coupon code OUTLANDER for $10 off your first box at www.fabfitfun.com.
Don't miss out on this amazing box from FabFitFun. Use coupon code OUTLANDER for $10 off your first box at www.fabfitfun.com.
So about the geese, she'd done some charcoal drawings and she gives him one, or actually she gives him two, and she gives him two of these sketches that she'd done of geese and says, Merry Christmas. One was a goose against a stormy sky. The second was of a dead goose hung by its feet. She'd done that one the night before. Taken her sketchbook to the smoke shed alone when she couldn't sleep. She shares some of the stories that Jamie had shared with her while she had been giving birth to Jem.
Yeah, that's not going in this next season.
Ha! I was about to say, don't spoil, don't rain on my parade, but you're right. I can't. Shoot balls.
I mean, he can still have told her the stories off,
just not
off
that
screen,
point.
But yeah. It could not have been from that moment.
Quote, he said, when a hunter kills a gray lag goose, he must wait by the body because the gray lag mate for life. And if you only kill one, the other will mourn itself to death. So you wait. And when the mate comes, you kill it too. Unquote. She got to thinking about being there alone and him being alone. Quote, the wild geese had said she needed him, would mourn his loss if it came, perhaps forever. Unquote. Roger's experience with geese, he talks about a time of his youth. His experience with geese was more of a comical relief. He was terrorized by the neighbor's geese as a lad.
Geese aren't nice.
No, oh, no, they neither are swans, girl.
Swans are
So Erica B. writes, quickly, though, things turn with the simple comment of a typical husband behavior, at least for me, what's for dinner? Mm-mm. It's never a good sign when you get a look asking about dinner. Bree goes down a wormhole of upsettedness as Roger didn't notice all the work she had to do at the house and all the stress of daily life when they were away. It's clear she feels underappreciated and just stressed dealing with all the folks.
I'm telling you, if dinner was my only, like, if dinner and housekeeping and being at my house was my only job, absolutely come home and ask me what's for dinner. If I've been working all day, like you've been working all day, that is not the first thing you need to say to me when I get home or when you get home.
Bree tries to ask him something when he accidentally gets dirt on the floor, and that is what put her over the edge, and she flips out on Roger with all the home life crap. Poor Roger is so confused as to why she is so angry. I have definitely lost my shiz at my husband over something dumb after a bad or stressful day. I don't really blame her, but that said, poor Roger is being on the receiving end of it. I feel like she is blowing up at Roger in the same style Claire blows up at Jamie and often in the bedroom. Apple doesn't fall far from the tree, I say.
True, and you have to also understand this is a culmination. However, many months.
3 weeks or whatever, yeah.
However long this separation has been, yeah. Of her having to do everything.
Yep.
And it not having a moment's peace, because even when she finds peace, like if she gets... If her little tiny world, meaning her and Jem, if she gets Jem settled and she's like, cool, he's sleeping, I have like an hour to myself, that hour is going to be interrupted by somebody else's problems and somebody else's kids. And she's just like, this was never mine. This is not my, you know, I am I am a dependent of the owners of this place, but I never signed on to be the owner of this place. And I, you know, she was never raised to handle this kind of thing. She's not used to it. She's from a small family with, you know, they didn't even have like extended family things that we know of in the book. So it's like having to somehow now have to deal and be that peacekeeper for large groups of people has to be just like so frustrating.
Erica continues. After Bree spills what's on her mind, they are able to make up, thankfully. Bree shares the story about the greylag geese Jamie shared with her, and the tangent they go off on about the geese is a bit amusing with Roger's stories. Being home from Christmas is not all candy canes and rainbows, as we find out for these two. And Megan P. writes, my first thought while reading this moody exchange between Bree and Roger is she must be pregnant. But then I remember she's still lactating and think, okay, let's see what's really going on here. Wow, I really feel for Brianna in this moment. Modern day momming is challenging. She's doing it in an environment that makes every task more difficult and oftentimes very strenuous. Bless Roger for being savvy enough to give Bree the space she needed to vent and decompress all of the pent up emotions she has been feeling. The chapter is so relatable and I loved it.
And that was chapter 33. We're going to finish up this week's read along with chapter 34 entitled Charms.
Claire, getting all up in the goose grease.
That sounds gross.
Mrs. Bug also is a fan, but of course for different reasons. The scene is so great. Claire is working on straining and purifying the goose grease while Mrs. Bug is watching her. Claire's plans include, quote, a salve of wild sarsaparilla and bittersweet for burns and abrasions, a mentholated ointment for stuffy noses and chest congestion, and something soothing and pleasantly scented for diaper rash, perhaps a lavender infusion with juice of crushed jewelweed leaves.
I can't imagine being that productive without Google.
People were actually Googles back then.
I know, but could you imagine being dropped into that timeline where you're like, okay, so I have all this goose grease. Because if I had all that goose grease, my first step would be, dear Google,
get rid of it.
What can I do with goose grease? What is goose grease good for? Find me a recipe with goose grease or something along those lines. It wouldn't be, I have this ready-made list of all the things I can make with goose grease. Yes, people were Google, but it's a good thing she has people around her to be her Google.
Whereas Mrs. Bug.
I think she grows into Mrs. Butt.
Whereas Mrs. Bug's plans are pastry crust for venison pie, haggis, Cullen skink, corn crowdy, raisin tart with jam and clotted cream. Though, of course, most of that didn't include goose grease. Just
say,
like,
I was like
the,
wait, what?
The crusty bit. But those are all the things she's thinking about for the holidays.
Gotcha.
So let's get to the most important part here. Jemmy can crawl, yo. He's around there somewhere. That's the difference. So when I adopted my kitties, they could already walk. They could already get into things. They could already jump. Maybe not as much as a 1 year old can't, an 8 or 10 week old maybe can't jump as high as a 1 or 7 year old, but they can already get around and get into the things and get in trouble and almost kill themselves. When you have a human infant, obviously one of the positive things is, at least until they crawl, they're not mobile. Like, they can't get into stuff. So what was that transition like for you, Summer, when your daughter went from blessedly not into things to being able to get into things?
It's a moment where...
Do you remember it?
No. But...
So it didn't screw you over then.
No. But it's one of those moments of panic when it starts, because you start thinking about all the things you may or may not have booby trapped. That's not a thing. Baby proofed. So you start thinking of, okay, what is baby proofed? What isn't baby proofed? What do I need to baby proof? What are the things? Now that this is happening, what do I need to do to make sure that I don't kill this thing?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what you do until they're old enough to take care of themselves. It is just a never ending parade of ideas in your head of what do I have to do to not kill it?
That's hysterical.
You sure sounded like it was.
Yeah. Highland Scots mostly saw Christmas as a religious observance rather than a festival or something like a feast. A festival, whatever. She and Jamie had exchanged gifts. He had gotten her a wooden ladle, and she'd made him a new shirt with a ruffle because his old one was pretty worn or gone.
Those are better presents than a juniper leaf.
Yeah, sprig, yeah. Together, some of the women had made molasses toffee and taken it around the ridge for gifties for the kiddos.
Oh my God, that was hysterical to me.
Yes, it was. It was not just because the kids liked him, but it also shut them up.
I'm going to glue their little mouths shut temporarily.
Especially if
maybe
they can walk. Hogmanay, however, was the shiznit. That was part of the reason she wanted to have some more medicinals ready. Because when people have the shiznit, they get drunk, they party, they fall, they eat, they puke, they hurt themselves, yo, all that. She wanted to be prepped for whatever shenanigans or the results, the physical results of shenanigans that went down. So this is part of the reason, sorry. Grease gone, she had ladled it out. Mrs. Bug eyes the remnants, which are the broth. And Claire tells her, only half. Claire wants it to, as just as she has before with other things, to use as a, like, literally to grow mold, something that is for nourishment of any kind of penicillin she might be able to get, like the mold spores from that fall from the air. And Mrs. Bug is having a hard time accepting her mistress's dedication to this mold. Another mention of Atso, quote, I turned my head to hide a smile and found Atso the kitten balanced on his hind legs on the bench, foreclaws anchored in the tabletop, his big green eyes watching the movements of the ladle with fascination, unquote. Claire assures Mrs. Bug that the broth she gives Atso is from her own half. She's not going to be getting into Mrs. Bug's half. And Mrs. Bug says that Atso is a great mouser. She's like, basically, he's so great. He's helping so much with stuff and keeping the mice away that she's like, if you don't give him more, she's like, I'll give him more because he deserves it.
Mice are killing me, man. I got up to the cabin.
Not you have mice? House.
I got up to the cabin last weekend, and there's intermittent issues with mice. But if you don't want to put out poison because you have other pets, there's not a ton you can. I mean, there are things you can do. I'm not saying there's not things you can do. So don't come at me, internet. There are things you can do. But from what I have found, the most because there's not a cat up at the cabin, the most productive way of disposing of these mice is to leave a bowl of water anywhere.
Oh, that's funny. Because they go in and they drown?
Yeah, and they can't get out.
That's so, it's not funny, but it's like, really? Like they don't drink out of it? They actually,
I'm sure they're thirsty and they're trying to drink out of it, but I've had it with dog food water bowls. Dog water bowls, excuse me. Buckets under the sink. Like,
oh, wow.
You put a bucket under the sink to like catch a drip. If there's any water in the bottom, you'll come back and find mice floating in it. Like it's, and other people are like, oh, well, you just put peanut butter onto this. And I was like, just put a bowl of water anywhere.
That's too funny.
In this house. So I'm sure that if once we get a cat up there, a cat will be just as effective on the local mice population. However, until that day, bowls of water have been doing just fine.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Bug tells her, Claire, of a man in the Highlands who, back when they were in Scotland, obviously, who had been a type of healer. Claire's reminded of, and as she describes what this guy did and offered, Claire's reminded of a certain ill wish that she'd been gifted. Mrs. Bug had used the word carline. The man that she describes stank because he'd had no woman to do his cleaning or his laundry for him.
What a lazy
now, Claire
son
asks,
of a bitch.
Claire asks if people still went to him, even though he was sketch. Quote, there was no one else, Mrs. Bug said, simply. And she says this, or as she says this, she's fingering something inside her pocket. She calls Claire a clean sort, bar the moldy bread. But she confirms with Claire, you're a charmer, Now, Claire is careful with her wording. She says, not exactly. It's only that I know a bit about plants and surgery, but I really don't know anything at all about charms or spells, unquote. So there's that. So Jem, trying to get to Adso's saucer, had upset the latter who had hissed at him. And Jem, scared, shrieked, which also scared Adso to run under the table. Then, smooth as anything, Mrs. Bug tells Claire that she went to that Highland man once. She'd paid him all the money they'd had for a charm that would allow her to carry a child to term. And that charm was supposed to allow her to carry a child to term. But part of the charm, or part of the package basically that he was selling, he said that if she birthed a live child, her husband would die. She took it. She gave him her money. She took the charm, but she put it away. That's what she had in her pocket. That's what she had been fingering. She gave it to Claire. Quote, "It was a small chunk of stone, pale pink in color and veined with gray, badly weathered. It had been crudely carved into the shape of a pregnant woman, little more than a huge belly with swollen breasts and buttocks above a pair of stubby legs that tapered into nothing. I had seen such figures before in museums. Had Johnny Howlett made it himself, or perhaps found it in his pokings through wood and moor, a remnant of much more ancient times?" Unquote. Whatever he had been, she thought, he was astute enough to have seen the love between the Bugs. Quote, "Was it easier for a woman, then, to forswear the hope of children, thinking it a noble sacrifice for the sake of a much-loved husband, than to suffer bitterness and self-blame for constant failure? Carline he may have been, Johnny Howlett, but a charmer indeed." Unquote. And then, quote, Mrs. Bug closes the chapter out with, "So it may be as you'll find some lass who's a use for it. Shame to let it go to waste, aye? And I wonder who that lass may
pick
be."
Pick me.
Yeah, shush.
No, I
you,
said pick me, I know the
you
answer.
Say you don't want
Jeez,
anymore.
Don't give it to me. I don't want that. Oh. I don't want the thing.
I look. I can't tell. I don't see a video of you.
This was the chapter when I realized, because in talking to Davina over the years, she's mentioned that I don't know if she's mentioned it, but I know that we've mentioned her mispronouncing or changing the pronunciations of things from book to book. And I'm sure a lot of it has to do with just time passage. I don't know if whatever.
Yeah.
But this was the chapter when I realized that she'd forgotten how to pronounce Gilas. She pronounced it Gilas. Yeah. Gilas Duncan. And I was like, who's that? And then I thought about it and I was like, oh, okay, never mind. Gilas.
That's funny.
Yeah. So I think this was a good chapter because we get to know a little bit more about Miss Bug, other than she becomes a little more human. You know what I mean? Because before this chapter, it was a lot of uppity Mrs. Bug going in and touching everybody else's things and usurping everyone's rights of things and, you know, putting herself in charge, even though she's not herself, if you will. And I think that this was a more humanizing chapter. And hopefully after this chapter, she won't be dumping out Claire's penicillin experiments anymore.
Oh, gosh. I think she's over that. I think she saw Claire's reaction and she's like, yeah, I get it. Whatever you crazy mofo are into.
At least you're clean.
You know what I mean?
At least yes. You bathe and do your laundry. Thank you very much. And that was chapter 34. Join us next time when we will be discussing chapter 35, entitled Hogmanay. And if you'd like to join as a contributor for our read-along, there are still slots available if you go to www.outlanderpod.com/fierycross.
And as always, we'd love to have you help us continue the conversation. Join us in our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Thank you, as always, so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode. Thank you to our generous partner, Zencastr, who offers high-fidelity podcasting. Check out Zencastr and use coupon code OUTLANDER20. Outlander20 for 20% off 3 months or 20% off for a year. Connect with us. Visit our website at outlanderpod.com. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/outlanderpod. We'd love for you to join our Facebook community at outlanderpod.com/group. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at outlanderpod.